Can you envision a world where you and your family in America and those who immigrated from Africa and the Caribbean could receive immersive financial education and invest in fractional and whole shares of U.S. publicly traded companies? That time has come. Wakeza. Finally, from your mobile phone, you can start investing in building wealth. Wakeza. Just sign up for the Wakeza app and join the Wakeza community to receive ongoing adult and youth financial education from licensed advisors. Wakeza. You become a financially educated and protected investor. Wakeza has one empowering objective, creating financial inclusion and your family's generational wealth for the African diaspora. Wakeza.
And hello, everyone. I'm Sabrina Lamb, the founder and CEO of Wakeza, which means save and invest in Swahili, and also the founder of World of Money, the leading provider of immersive financial education for young people ages 7 to 18 in the United States and globally. The Planet Wakeza podcast introduces you to leading financial experts, and today is no different. Interviewed by Nidalyn Pena, the co-chair of World of Money's Leadership Council, our expert is Brooklyn's own Yanely Espinal, the founder of the wildly popular YouTube channel, Miss Be Helpful. After completing Teach for America, Yanely paired her love for teaching with her passion for financial literacy, creating her YouTube channel for people to engage with topics such as budgeting and managing credit, saving and investing for retirement, and much, much more. She also serves as the Director of Educational Outreach at NextGen Personal Finance and is a member of CNBC's Financial Wellness Advisory Council. And guess what? Yanely is also a best-selling author of Mind Your Money, and we are thrilled to welcome Yanely to Planet Wakeza.
Hello.
So good to see you, and I'll turn it over to the amazing Nidalyn Pena.
Sounds good.
Hi, Yanely. So nice to see you again. I have shared this a little bit with Yanely and Sabrina before that I have been a supporter for a while. So I feel like I know your story pretty well, and I know a little bit about your money journey, but that not everybody on the call may be aware of your story, how you got into financial literacy, and a little bit about your upbringing. So I was thinking we can just start with you sharing some of that.
Yes, let's do it. What's up, everybody? I'm so excited to join y'all live today. One of the things that got me into money was honestly not having any and not really knowing anybody in my family that was comfortable talking about money or, you know, just helping me with my money management. So I grew up in a Dominican American household. My parents are both Dominican immigrants, and I have 8 brothers and sisters. So there's 9 of us total. And so moving to New York City with little to no education, neither one of my parents really went beyond 3rd or 4th grade in school. So they didn't know English. They didn't really have an education. They didn't really have, the ability to find high paying careers with the type of jobs available to immigrants. And then they had 9 kids. So that to me was like a recipe for disaster, because you need a lot of money to support so many mouths to feed. And yet you don't really have social capital, financial capital. You don't have, education. And so they had a really tough, early life and continue to struggle here. And then I think that because they just knew what they knew, that's what they did, which was manage our household with cash. So pretty much I grew up in a house where everything was money. Everything with money was cash. There was no checks. There was no debit cards. I never saw a credit card. They didn't have bank accounts. So that was really pretty much how I lived up until very recently. I helped my parents open their first bank accounts, which we did online, because they reach retirement age and you cannot collect your Social Security benefits on a paper check anymore. They used to mail checks out. Now it has to be a digital transaction. So you have to have a bank account. And that was the first time that I like sat with my parents and helped them create bank accounts. So growing up low income and immigrant family, with, you know, a very urban environment. I was a public school kid. I went to public schools my whole life. It meant like I was around others that were just like me. A lot of Black and brown kids, a lot of Latinos, a lot of Latinas who pretty much all were in the struggle too. And yeah. So I never really saw anybody that had a different life from me until I got to college. And that was, you know, what changed my life, that I got a scholarship to Brown University and I got plucked out of Brooklyn and placed onto this gorgeous campus in Providence, Rhode Island, with very rich, you know, people around me, the kids of very wealthy families. And that was the first time I felt like real pressure to like to try to act like I got money, even if I don't have it. Like, so I was, you know, paying for things that I couldn't afford. I would just put it on my credit card, buy my textbooks, my laptop, put it on my credit card. You know, everybody's going to spring break trips in Cancun. I'm going to put it on my credit card. And that was really how I got into a lot of debt and my introduction really to the world of money.
Yeah. Wow. And as you shared that example of how your parents had to open a bank account because of the Social Security. So I'm super close to my mom and my grandma, and my grandma specifically also got Social Security now. And every single month, first of the month, she is like, okay, we got to go to the bank to take the money out. So that habit of her still needing the cash. And I'm like, I don't understand why you want to have it in cash so badly. You can keep it in your bank account, but she, first of the month, I'm there at the ATM taking the money out. So many of these kind of mindsets and habits yes. among our Latino and Black and brown communities still kind of ruminate through. So yes, it's definitely important to talk about these things. So thank you for sharing that. And like Sabrina mentioned, you are now an author and so proud of you. And I'm honestly going to say this too. Yes. Your book to like my mentees and my younger like siblings and cousins and stuff that are learning about money and yeah. are starting off in their money journeys, even if they're just young professionals. So can you share a little bit about what inspired you to write the book, given that you have a sizable audience on social yeah. media and, you know, you already had a reach among this community, but, you know, now you are an author. So what inspired mm-hmm. you for that and anything else that you might want to share on your book?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you, I have read dozens and dozens and dozens of books about personal finance, probably over 100 at this point, because I started reading books about money when I was like 22 years old and I just turned 34. So over 10 years of reading books about money and investing and budgeting and personal finance and personal development. And so for me, I think back to some of those classic money books that like really gave me a foundation. It gave me the knowledge, the confidence, right? Like it hyped me up about like, oh, like if I can do this stuff, put this stuff into practice, then I can, you know, get better with my money. And those are books like The Millionaire Next Door, Your Money or Your Life, Susie Orman's Women and Money. That was the first book I ever read about money. Automatic Millionaire by David Bach, Get a Financial Life by Beth Kobliner. Like those books were amazing in helping me. But the reality is I always noticed that when I was reading those books, there was something missing that I felt like it wasn't reflective of like my lived experience, what I was actually experiencing in my house. They never mentioned, you know, not having enough money because you have to send money back to your home country. Like my mom was always trying to find somewhere pennies rubbing together to find money to send back to Santo Domingo, to Dominican Republic, because she had to help her siblings and my cousins and my aunts and uncles that still live there. And at the time when my grandparents were still alive, her mother and her father. So even though we were really struggling here, there was this other life over there that was yeah. even more difficult. And that constant juxtaposition, like that balance of like one foot is in the Caribbean and the other foot is in New York City. And that I never saw anybody write about anything like that in a book about money. And yet that was such a core staple of the financial problems that we were having in my house. Also, I never really saw anybody talking about the struggles of not being able to go through the college application process because you don't know how it works. My parents never went to college as a first generation American and a first generation college graduate. I had to go through FAFSA by myself. I didn't know how to do all this stuff. And so I just was like, there's this little part of me that mm-hmm. feels like, as amazing as these books have been in terms of giving me the education, the information, the knowledge, the confidence, they didn't do the cultural relevance, the cultural component that I feel like is really missing here to make me understand that even though I don't have a lot in common with these people, this world of like money and personal finance, it could still include me in it. And so that was what motivated me to write a book about money. I was like, I want to also, you know, translate a lot of the stuff I learned in these books for people that have similar experiences to me, a book that like I would have wanted to read when I was 19, 20, 21, when I was 18 or 22. Like I wanted to write that book because I feel like it didn't really exist yet. And yeah. So my book is kind of a combination of stories of my upbringing and growing up in New York City, like getting caught stealing, you know, like taking my sister's Jordans when she wasn't paying attention and wearing the, you know, like the type of stuff from that growing up that really affects who you are. It makes you kind of the person that you are, and also how that affected my relationship with money. And then I combine those stories with personal finance strategies and lessons that I have learned along the way.
Yes. And I think you did an amazing job with it. I'm still almost done with it. So, but just reading it and hearing your stories, I felt so seen with so many of the experiences that you mentioned, like the remittances, or even, you know, just maybe not in cash form, but the way it happens in my family is in sending boxes to DR all the time.
I talked about that too.
You know, there's so many little experiences that it's so common in our lives and subconsciously affect our money mindsets and behavior. So I honestly love it. And even just bridging the education, the FAFSA applications and applying to college and, you know, all of that financial responsibility with, you know, having parents that never done it before. It's so many important topics. So
yeah, definitely.
So since World of Money focuses on Black and Brown students for the most part in New York City, and a lot of the LC members, leadership council members, as what I'm part of, we are, you know, young, diverse professionals that care about money and care about financial literacy among our community. So for me, specifically, you know, first gen Latina community, and all of that is super important to me in teaching that. So I think you have such a unique and amazing perspective, and you are such an expert on this specific topic. And given that a lot of the audience may be in that demographic as well. So can you share some of the kind of money mindsets or the way that you think about money and financial literacy and personal finance for specifically the Black and Latino community, and especially as a young professional?
Yes. So I think that we have this very unique experience because the systems that were built and developed in this country around money, like banking and investing and insurance and taxes, all of those systems were not developed with us in mind. Mm-hmm. They were not created for us or by us. And so we oftentimes do not see ourselves reflected in those systems. And mm-hmm. those systems can sometimes clash with the beliefs and the customs that we have. So mm-hmm. when I first started reading books about money, one of the biggest things I kept saying over and over again, pay yourself first, pay yourself first. And it's like, well, I was taught in my house that you don't do that because that's rude. You know, right. Like in my house, the host eats last, right? Mommy will always teach us that when people come over to your house, you don't serve your plate first. You serve everyone. You take care of everybody else. And yeah. then whatever's left, even if it's only a little bit, that's what you eat. So it was to me like the advice in the mainstream money world would sometimes bump up against the things that were like values that I had and mindsets that I was developing because of my culture, because of, you know, my upbringing and my family. So I would say like one of the biggest things that I have developed now is this mindset that like you create your own financial like toolkit with mm-hmm. the strategies and the beliefs and the resources and the tools that you choose to include in your financial life. You pick and choose them because some of the things in these books are going to be appropriate, helpful, and relevant for you. And some of them is just not, it's not going to vibe with you. It's not going to feel right. It's going to bump up against some of your own customs and beliefs. So I think of it like a wardrobe, you know, like when you're building your closet, you pick and choose things that matches your style, that you like to wear, colors that you like, patterns that you like, specific types of items that you like, accessories that you like. And that puts together your style, your right. wardrobe, your ensemble, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, it's the same way with finance. You have to pick and choose the things that fit your style, your financial style, and your financial beliefs, especially as a person of color, because there's been a lot of a history of racism within finance in this country, you know, especially if you're a dark-skinned person in this country, if you're Black, Black, or if you're Afro-Latino, if you're the type of person who visibly is read as a Black person in America, you're going to be much more discriminated against in housing, right? For example, you might want to go and get a mortgage, and then the person who decides whether you're going to get approved for this loan or not sees your house, and they either don't approve you for the mortgage or they value your house for less than what it's really worth. And a lot of people think, oh, but those are problems of the past. And the truth is that a lot of that stuff still exists today. So I think the biggest piece for me is that we have to, you know, as BIPOC communities, we have to pick and choose the components of the mainstream financial space that are going to work for us. And we have to go out and seek the resources that speak to us. So I didn't see a book that I felt reflected my life and my experiences. I wrote one, right? Like, but now there's so many, you know, Mind Your Money is just one of so many books. I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi, Get Money by Kristen Wong, Money Out Loud by Bernard Nat, Cashing Out by Kirsten and Julian Saunders, Get Good with Money, Tiffany Alice. I mean, I could go on and on about books written by people of color today that did not exist just a few years back when I was getting started with my journey. So I think to anybody that's now a person of color right now who's looking to get started with finance, you could be more empowered than ever before because there are so many resources today by us, for us, that didn't exist even just, you know, 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, and that's honestly amazing. And I know that we're going to share out some of those resources after for the audience, because I need to definitely add all those to my reading list. And I wanted to add some of, or ask you actually, based on what you just said, is there anything in particular that maybe you've had to unlearn from our Latino culture that maybe influenced your money mindset, like serving yourself last, which, you know, super common experience in a Latinx family, that you think, you know, this I need to unlearn because I just, although it's how I grew up, I don't think it's the way for me to reach my financial goals, or vice versa, something that you want to keep. And it's maybe not as popular with like mainstream financial literacy advice.
Yes. So I think one of the big things that I was taught constantly over and over and over in my house was to save. Like, you know, ahorra tu dinero, save your money. And I think it's because that's just what works for my parents. So for like the holidays, I remember my mom would put stuff on layaway. And she would go to the store every week and put, like, after church, she would walk to the store and add $20 to the layaway account. $20. So in 5 weeks, $20 payments, she has now paid $100 for her items, and she could take it home on the last payment. Yeah. That doesn't exist anymore. Now it's, I want this, I'm gonna buy it right now. If I don't have the money, I could use a credit card. I can use buy now, pay later. I could put it on Apple Pay. I could do all these different things. Now there's so many like tools to help you just get what you want right now. Yeah. And so I think the mindset around like saving up for things to buy it, that's why saving money and having cash like in envelopes and in shoebox under the bed, like that was why cash was so important to them, because that was the way that it worked for them financially to get the things they needed. Right. But now we are in a completely different world of money. We're in a different environment, in a different financial landscape, with technology has advanced things so much that I had to kind of realize I have to separate myself from the way that my parents look at money, the way they view money. They see it as this process to build up constantly for things, and that cash is the only way to do that. And so you have to save. My mindset is, honestly, cash is not that important to me, because cash doesn't grow any interest. It doesn't grow in value. It actually loses value over time because of inflation. And so in order to really like be able to make moves in the long run, I have to be growing my money's value. So for me, if I have the opportunity to buy something, I'm the least likely way I'm going to pay is with cash. I'm usually going to use a credit card and get some free miles and points so I can get a free flight and pay off my credit card in full, so I don't have any debt or pay any interest, but I'm also getting perks. You know, and at the end of the day, for me, a lot of that was not what I was told. It was actually the opposite of that, that was modeled for me. So I had to kind of like develop my own mindset, and saving cash and having money, like, to me is the least important thing. The most important thing for me is that I'm spending within my means and investing the difference. So the more I can invest, the better. And so for me, that has been a huge shift in the way that I think about things. When my parents would be like, oh, I have $50 left over after I buy groceries, I'm going to put that in an envelope and hide it in the kitchen somewhere. So in the future, I'll find it and be like, oh, look, I have my extra $50. And in my mind, I'm like, mommy, I would never do that. I would take that $50 and invest it. So I've had to really shift like the way that I prioritize different aspects of my finances.
Right. And I think as I've become really interested in like just different ways that different customers in America think about money or spend money, I've learned that, you know, more affluent, higher net worth customers never use any debit or cash or anything like that. It's all credit. Whereas that's completely different than the way, you know, more a lower mass or lower income customers typically, you know, love using debit, cash, and all of that. So that's primarily the case in our Black and Brown community. So it's important that you just, you know, share how to kind of reframe that mindset that we grew up with.
Definitely.
So I think that we might have a lot of young professionals listening live, people in their early to mid 20s, like myself. So from all the money advice that's out there, you know, so many different gems that you share in your book or we're exposed to on a daily basis, luckily from so many diverse influencers talking about this. But if you could share maybe, you know, one or two key pieces that you would love everybody to take away from this conversation or to think about as they embark on their money journeys, what would it be?
Ooh, so I would start with four words: cash flowing, appreciating assets. If you can just start putting whatever amount of money each week or each month that you can towards cash flowing, appreciating assets.
Okay.
That means like the largest portion of the money that you want to grow is going to go towards cash flowing, appreciating assets. And a little piece can go towards things that don't fall into that category, but you might be interested in. So okay, for those of you who are like, what is a cash flowing, appreciating asset? I got you. A cash flowing, appreciating asset means an investment that is going to grow or expected to grow in value over time, especially over the long term, that also cash flows, which means that it is able to give you back a small payment, whether that comes from interest, whether that comes from dividends, whether that comes from rent payments that you're collecting on a rental property, different ways that you're getting cash payments to you along the way that the investment is also growing in value at the same time. So there's two ways that you're becoming wealthier. One is the cash payments, cash flowing part, and the other is the appreciation, appreciating asset part. So that is super important, because what I notice is a lot of times newfangled things come out, hot, new, trendy stuff, and they specifically target Black and Brown communities. For example, the cryptocurrency space recently and NFTs, that whole space was blowing up at the very beginning of the pandemic. People were stuck at home, couldn't go out, all of a sudden pushing crypto and pushing NFTs specifically on Black and Brown communities. And they do that in interesting ways, like hiring Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B to do ads about crypto and Bitcoin. Coin for Cash App. And it's like, wait, hold on a second. Why they don't have Taylor Swift promoting that, right? And Taylor Swift actually specifically said, no, I don't want to promote that. So I think that the key is that it's not that you cannot participate in crypto. It's that crypto should be such a tiny little piece of your portfolio, because the large majority of your portfolio should be cash flowing, appreciating assets. And this is so important, especially for people of color, because we have been so far behind, and the wealth gap is a racial wealth gap at this point, that we cannot play around. We have to work hard to bridge that gap. And the more we mess around with things that are extremely risky or, you know, kind of still uncertain, no regulation and things like that, that's where you start to kind of take riskless money that we can afford to risk not closing that wealth gap. So at the end of the day, I would say that the one piece is really just focus on learning about, exploring and investing in cash flowing, appreciating assets. And then the second piece I would say is, open a Roth IRA. I wish I had done that earlier in my life, because a Roth IRA is one of the only investment accounts that allows you to take full control of the investments that you buy, which is different from like a retirement plan at your job. And second of all, that any profits that you grow inside of a Roth IRA account will never be taxed. And that is huge, because a lot of people, when I ask like my friends and people around the block, like I'm like, do you know what's your biggest expense in your whole life, the most expensive thing that you're going to end up spending money on? And they always say either a house or college. And both of those are wrong. It's taxes. So the opportunity for you to be able to find a way to not have to pay taxes on profits that you're growing in your cash flowing, appreciating assets and your investments, that is amazing. And we can't overlook that. So for me, the easiest way for most people to do that is through a Roth IRA account.
Oh my God. I love all those gems. I wish I could talk to you forever and just tips, but that's why we have your book. So thank you so much for sharing, Ganelli. It was great talking to you and for everything that you shared.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Yes. And before we wrap for today, again, thank you so much. Super proud of you. Thank you for probably was 100 years ago when you taught at World of Money.
Yes, I remember it. Yes. It was so sweet.
And brought so much joy because sometimes when we're talking about financial education or teaching financial education, we take out the joy, but financial education actually brings joy and confidence to our communities. Yeah. So where can everyone find you, Ms. Yanli?
Yes.
Best-selling author.
Thank you. Oh, that it just feels amazing to be able to say that. It's been a whirlwind, really. But if you want to find out more about the book, you can go to mindyourmoneybook.com. There is a link to buy the book there, as well as a link to a free guide. And my favorite part of the free guide is there's a link to a spreadsheet that I put together that has over 200 financial literacy content creators and influencers that you can follow, which I have not seen that anywhere else on the internet. I think I'm the first to create it. So that's in the free guide, mindyourmoneybook.com. And then if you're on social media, anywhere, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you can follow me at Miss Be Helpful, M-I-S-S-B-E Helpful.
Tell us about Miss Be Helpful, that channel. What was your inspiration and what has been the response to the channel?
You know, I started in 2015, which is wild, almost 10 years ago now, when I was in my early 20s and I had just made my last payment towards my credit card debt because I had about $20,000 of credit card debt from my 4 years in college and a little bit after, where I was just spending and only paying my minimum payment due. And so I was accruing a lot of interest and the debt got out of control. And I finally picked up a book and read about money. And I realized I have to get out of this debt because this double digit interest on my credit card is just crushing me. It's preventing me from building any real wealth. Mm-hmm. So I decided to get serious. I created a plan and I paid off all the credit cards. And at that point, I had learned so much about credit scores and improving your credit score and paying off credit card debt that I just felt like I was going to explode. I had information inside me that I wanted to share. And so that's when I created a YouTube channel. I called it Miss Be Helpful. And I just wanted to help people understand credit and understand how to get out of debt. And then I eventually spread over to talking about saving, talking about budgeting, talking about investing, and all the things that I was learning in my own life and applying, I would share it on the channel. And honestly, I thought maybe a couple hundred people would like follow and become a little crew, you know, of money nerds, but it ended up getting 10, 20, 30, 40 thousands of subscribers to this day. It has over 4 million views on the channel, which is just a testament to the fact that people want to learn about money and they want to talk about money, but a lot of times they don't really know where to go. So they end up on Google, they end up on YouTube, how to improve my credit score, you know, and then that's how they end up finding content like that.
Well, also, we have to also honor that sometimes people feel shame or embarrassment and stay stuck in that emotional feeling of not knowing. But actually, if you set that aside, actually your own financial independence can lead to a revolution in your life and that of your family and that of your future generations.
I love that.
Again, thank you so much, Yanli Espinal. Thank you, Nidalyn Pena, co-chair of World of Money's Leadership Council. Please listen, share this broadcast, or wherever podcasts are found. Thank you so much. See you again soon.
Bye.